The business of culture, the culture of business, media and entertainment, entrepreneurs, creatives, misfits, iconoclasts, so much more. Full disclosure, I'm Robin Farzad.
Was just like, hey, I wonder if I can do this. Like, I need to figure out something to do with my life. A, B, C, and D lately hasn't worked. There are people who have said to me, you know, I could have all the savings in the world and a 5-year business plan and all of these different things and investors and so on, and I still would never open a store. I didn't have any of that. I don't have any business background. I don't have any of that. And so I literally get $300 to my name.
Here is the unlikely story of OMG OCPs. Yes, creativity and salvation through oatmeal cream pie cookies. You're definitely going to want to hear this story. So stay tuned. This episode is made possible by the support of Salomon & Ludwin, a boutique wealth management firm dedicated to helping families make smart financial decisions. You worked hard and sacrificed to create and build wealth. They treat advice given to you with the respect your journey deserves. For over 30 years, Salomon & Ludwin has earned a reputation of trust and confidence, recognized by Barron's as a Hall of Fame advisor. More at salomonludwin.com. Full Disclosure Podcast to NPR, Spotify, and of course, Apple Podcasts. The link is fulldradio.com. You can follow on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn at handle fulldradio. And a shout out to our listeners on WVTF Radio IQ, Virginia's NPR news station. You can DM me to carry Full Disclosure on your air. Joining me at her storefront in historic Shaco Bottom, Richmond, Virginia, is Erin Kennedy, owner and founder of OMG OCPs, which is Oatmeal Cream Pie Cookies.
It is.
It's 2 years old now. How are you?
I am good. How are you? Hello, hello.
Well, I love this story, and everybody read about you last year in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and I'm always fascinated at people who kind of found their footing and reinvented during the pandemic, because, as we say, it was a great reset.
Sure, absolutely.
That moment of weightlessness. This has been a through line in the show in 2020 when suddenly the unemployment rate spikes. People are out of work. They're reconsidering. People in food service and hospitality, do I want to be in these frontline positions? Tell me about your inception moment.
Well, this wasn't the first time I had to reinvent myself. So, you know, I had to do it in the past. I was working full time. And in the 2008-2009 recession, I had actually gotten hit with that, too. So that was a time period where I had a time off and had to go from a job that paid well and
sure,
find something that I genuinely loved that paid half of that. And so that was a big reinvention. And that particular reinvention is what led me into the next, you know, decade of my life, which was in Africa and with refugees and some of the most amazing things. So every time I have to reinvent myself, not by my choice, the best things come from it. So you know, with the pandemic and 2020, we were all affected. I had gotten kind of essentially what was my dream job. You know, it was a high position in a nonprofit. It was essentially what I had worked for, what I had wanted. And unfortunately, it turned out to be very challenging. And so challenging more in terms of
sure. The
people and who I was working with. And so it was it took a really hard toll on my mental health, to be honest. And because it was a dream job, it's kind of like meeting the person you idolize the most and then it being them maybe being a jerk or something like that. And so all of a sudden I was like, wow, I worked so this is what I wanted to do. And this is not at all what I expected. And so I made the choice for my mental health that it was best for me not to do that. And so in that, you know, 3-month time period between then and starting OMG OCPs, it was just another time to reinvent myself.
Well, let me read from what you posted on, was it Instagram, I guess, when you were profiled last year by the Richmond Times-Dispatch.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you say, you're an open book with this. You shared about being a daughter, proud, you know, daughter of a single mother. I'm reading from Erin's post last year when she was profiled in the Richmond Times-Dispatch. She said, in 2018, 2019, I sank into a dark depression. Mm. At the time, I was working at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and I very much remember driving home from work on a stupidly stormy evening and was ready to be done with life.
Mm-hmm.
My self-worth was non-existent. I had lost the ability to feel joy, and I felt like even if I tried, I physically could not smile. I sat in my car with the rain pounding it, and my sobs were still louder. The next 2 hours, I sat there still, on the phone with the suicide hotline. By the end of it, I promised them and my mom that I would at least try talking to a therapist first. With the help of my unbelievably incredible therapist, medicine, and even the painful process of separating myself from lifelong people of importance to me, I've truly become my best, happiest, most joyful self. With that said, this isn't just a newspaper article, the profile. It's a major life win. In my darkest moments, I would never have thought this bright side of my life could exist. So to now sit on the interviewee side of the Richmond Times-Dispatch in the best place of my life, well, I hope that might provide anyone feeling hopeless that it doesn't have to always be that way. It takes work, a lot of vulnerability, and maybe even medicine, which is totally okay in your caps, but it's worth it. The other brighter side is so very worth it, and I'm so glad that I'm still here to be living it.
That is really true, very true. Quite profound now that I've kind of listened back to it. Yeah, I mean, that part of my life actually was kind of a bit before 2020. So really what I've learned, in so many years is I think a lot of my depression stemmed from a couple of different things. One was I'm a very unconventional person. My whole life has sort of been that way. It sort of kind of naturally happened, but there was a part of me that didn't feel like I fit because life is so conventional and these are the things that you follow. And, you know, I never felt like I needed to be a mom. You know, I've never felt like I've needed, and maybe this is because I'm an only child of a single mother, I've needed to have a man. I can always do those things. And so I moved to Africa when I was 25. These are things that a lot of people just don't do, but are something that's very natural in my life. But then, you know, coming home from that, a lot of people didn't understand it either. And so a lot of the depression and stuff really stemmed from not being understood and feeling like I had to be something specific in a world that required that of me, but never feeling deeply like that's what I personally wanted to do. You know, like my priorities had to be to look good. My priorities had to be, you know, I needed to look good because that's what men want, you know, or I needed to, you know, be fit and because that's what society wants and God, you know, and all of these things.
But you were loaning your life to not-for-profit.
I know.
Kind of a selfless life.
I totally get that.
Poverty. But even within that, there were...
Well, and some of that too. So besides that, some of it was also I came home from Africa way too soon. But I came home when I was about 29. And the reason I came home was because I felt like I needed to. I'm getting older. Like, if I'm an only child, I need to start having grandbabies for my mom. And I need to, you know, find somebody.
Well,
I need to settle down.
Back up and tell me what you did in Africa or what the draw was first.
So I was in Africa because I worked for an organization called Operation Smile. They do cleft lips
and palate. Cleft lip and palate,
yeah. And so, you know, the reason I've always been drawn to nonprofit work and drawn to things like that is my mom. She's a saint. And even when I was little, she was going to India and Africa on mission trips and so on. And she would bring these stories back and these pictures back. And I needed to be a part of that. Like, just I had to. And so, you know, it was purpose has always been very important to me. Far more than money or anything like that. So when I look for work and when I'm trying to do something, it has to be purposeful. It's not about how much I'm getting paid or, you know, how much I can make and what my, you know, my future is going to look. I might take a job that pays nothing because it's going to have more purpose than something that would. And so when I left Africa, not being ready, because I felt my greatest purpose when I was there, and I left more so because of societal things that I felt like I needed to be for society rather than what I felt personally. And so when I came home and returned back, you know, everybody was like, I can't believe you left. And why would you do that? You had the great. And I'm already thinking those things too, trying to be like.
Was your mother struggling by herself?
No. You know, I used, for me to say, oh, I'm coming back because I feel like I need to do A, B, C, and D for society felt like, one, I didn't want to admit that to myself. And two, I just thought that was silly, I guess. And I thought other people would think it's silly, but I still yet felt like I needed to do it. And so I always use an excuse of, oh, I needed to come home, I wanted to be closer with my family. And like, my mom, she needs to start, I would kind of use other people as my reason. One, because that's how I felt. But two, it makes more sense to other people, even though I knew inside, like, it was not my time to leave. Like, I came home and I was trying so hard to find that feeling, find that joy. I mean, when I was in Africa, like, the second that I swear, the second I got off the plane in Kenya, and I just felt home. Like, Africa to me really feels like home. And so having left it, I think, too early was really hard for me to readjust back here. One, because everybody was like, what's wrong with you? And then two, because nobody could understand anything that I did. Like, my daily life was insane in Africa. Like, it's just crazy. And so, but nobody here really understands it. So all of a sudden, I had to essentially just hold it all in. I really couldn't even talk about who I was, what I was.
You ended up in an office job and kind of a mundane office job.
Yeah. I mean, I came back. I mean, even my clothes.
To make ends meet?
Well, so basically what I was doing is I felt like I needed that international feel again. And so it's really hard to find in Richmond. And so I really had this, Denver and beyond mentality. And so over the course of the year that I was actually trying to really get out of Richmond, I sort of fell back in love with it. Granted, I was at a different age and I appreciated the river and a lot of things, but it's funny how I kind of fell in love with it in that process of trying to get out of it. And so I took a job with a nonprofit here it was another thing that was hard. I'd gone from being in this position in Africa to taking a much lower level position, but simply because I wanted to have and get in that international realm and arena again. And so I did it for a few years, and it was nonprofit, and I got to travel to a couple of places within that time period. But it was just, there was only two of us there in the office, in the Virginia office. And so I was one of them, and then the person above me. So for somebody who had been kind of a manager of all of these different programs in all of these different countries in Africa, to have no room to grow or move, which is something important to me, was complicated. And it got to a point where there was no way that I was going to grow. Like, he wasn't going to go anywhere.
How did you end up at the Times Dispatch?
So that job, we decided, that wasn't, I said, there's no room for me to grow. I can't do this anymore. And then I ended up at the Times because, again, when this is semi-funny, I guess, when you're abroad, particularly in Africa, like, everybody still reads the paper. Not everybody still reads the paper here anymore, the physical paper. So I came back and I was like, oh, it's the Richmond Times-Dispatch. Everybody reads the paper. This is going to be, and I can still be a part of the community. And, I love to write. So I was like, maybe I can get into this and I can do that. And so for some reason, I just thought the RTD would be a place where I could, have my hands, find some purpose and have my hands in the community. And it wasn't in the position that I was hired in. It was in the position that I created for myself within the RTD. It was very... advertising doesn't, go and talk to news. And I was like, well, that's not cool. I'm going to go down and talk to news. I'm just going to. And I, created a page that would help support nonprofits and get some, free marketing and stuff for them with half page, stories on themselves. And so, the RTD, we tried really hard there as well. It was a bunch of young folks, lads, I guess, or whatever we were at the time. And we tried to sort of form a group that would help really turn and take the physical paper and kind of push it to the online side of things and keep that rolling. And, how are we going to, appeal to all of the younger generations? And, unfortunately, that kind of fizzled out too, just from the paper.
It's been a depressing place paper, to be now for 20
right,
years. It's been shrinking.
Exactly.
And ditching
and
staff.
100%.
And helping subscribers to pay more. And it's in a death spiral right now.
Right. Which is unfortunate. Unfortunate,
but it's a story across the United States.
100%. So. But it takes away journalism in a sense. If you don't have newspapers, it's hard to have real journalism. And real journalism is very important for democracy.
You're talking about my world.
Yeah, it's super important for democracy. And so if you don't have that and you're just getting any your news from just bits here and there and on, you know, the internet and stuff, it's so having a real journalism and having people that are going to, you know, these meetings and stuff to report, you know, it's really important. Otherwise, people can feel like they can do anything they want.
Full disclosure, do stay with us. Full disclosure, I'm Robin Farzad. You're listening to Erin Kennedy. She is the founder of OMG OCPs. OMG, oatmeal cream pie cookies in the heart of Chaco Bottom, right near the historic farmer's market and train station. It's now 2 years old. It opened in early 2022, the storefront did. I want you, and I know it's traumatic, but you're an open book. Take me back to that night in the car. You're not happy with this job. You are a misfit back in the United States.
Yep.
Your mind, I mean, the whole existential thing to consider, I have no place in this life anymore.
Sure.
It's pretty, in hindsight, it's dire, but you know where that came from.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it was, you know, there was, of course, a lot of trauma from life built up. You know, when you have a father that decides to do anything else in, with his life besides be a father, that's already quite traumatic. You know, and there's a lot of years and work to get past that. And so, you know, that particular night, you know, you add that to it. I had been working out really hard. I'd gotten to the smallest size. And, you know, I had mentioned earlier, I thought that I needed, for societal reasons, I have to look good for people to like me. And so when I got down to the smallest size I had ever been, I had worked really hard. And I was, honestly, I'm not going to lie, I was quite in love with somebody. And I thought, okay, cool. They were very close. And I look good now. This is what's going to matter. And it didn't. And it's and honestly, it shouldn't have worked out. And I'm glad that it didn't. But at the time, it was really hard. So, you know, it was a broken heart. It was daddy issues. I was trying to find my way out of the RTD because it felt like it was dying. A lot of the people that were there were finding jobs
elsewhere. Yeah.
But again, I needed purpose. Mm. So it's not so easy to just find a job. Like and my friends were getting to a point where they were just like, why don't you just take this or just take this or you just need to get, you know, and that makes sense for a lot of people. There are a lot of people out there that are happy to take a job because they just need a paycheck. I can't like it is not about a paycheck and money for me. It is about if I have to do something for 8 hours a day, at least every day, I need it to feed my soul. And so, you know, I was at a point where it was just. It was a very dark place. Everything I felt like I had done, I had worked for, I was already still in a, you know, having issues, not having issues, but kind of in this dark place from even from Africa. Like, I mean, it was so hard. Even there are days when I still feel like I haven't fully recovered from living there. And I want to, I mean, I dream, I'm a very vivid dreamer and I probably dream about Cape Town at least three nights a week. So there is something in my subconscious, like in my body that needs Africa.
Were there all these unhelpful voices like, hello, Erin, you were in sub-Saharan Africa, you saw the worst of cleft lip and palate, of poverty, of kids begging in townships and slum areas. Mm-hmm. Like, compare your lot in life to that.
Well, and that's part of my depression too, is because I did know that. And so I felt like I shouldn't be feeling this way. Mm. So when you feel like there's so many things that just add up. There's so many, you know, me feeling like, you're right, then I felt like there are people that have it so much worse than me. Why am I? So I was ashamed of myself in that way. I was working really hard for all of these things that I thought would be what my life needed, and it wasn't. It proved that it wasn't. I was trying to find work and purpose, and I couldn't, and it was giving me this feeling of worthlessness. And so all of these things kind of added up. I was, you know, I had was living with a roommate at the time who was very work for money, do these things, here's routine. And she was kind of on my case about it. Not because I wasn't paying rent, but just because, I don't know, expectations.
There's a feeling of alienation.
Yeah.
I think the interest that some people, you grow up in a certain life, you have a certain idealism. Maybe I'm speaking autobiographically and something snaps it out of you, thumps it out of you. You know, I took a job out of college. I've said this before, where I was a misfit. A lot of people were taking these jobs in the Wall Street and the brokerage industry. And there is that pronounced alienation. I'm not getting purpose out of this. The paycheck is just subsidizing a cost of living that I don't really care for. And where's my point? And then so a lot of your 20s and 30s is kind of striving to find
That's sure. All of us, right, though, aren't we? You know, all of us are kind of striving that. You know, it was that one particular moment. It really felt like there had been so many nights when I was on my way home and I would call my mom or and I would just cry. I mean, I truly did not feel like I could physically smile. And, you know, this is how the brain works, too. I mean, you start having negative thoughts and then negative thoughts. And it is, you know, mental health and mental depression. I mean, it really is a disease, you know, but there is a way around it. I mean, just like if you break a bone, you don't go to the hospital for it. If your brain is broken, which I think probably more people have some breaks in their brain than they even want to admit, then you need to go. And
but you had not been seeking counseling or medication?
I hadn't done any of that. No.
Until?
No, not really. When I was like 16, my mom and I, you know, because we are an only mom and a single child and there's nobody else to fight with. So we did go to therapy not very long when I was like 16. And that actually got fixed out really well. He said, anytime you want to you guys are about to fight, I want you to say, this is what I heard you say. And I want your mom to be able to, you want you to let your mom say, this is what I meant. And I swear we did that 2 times and we never fought again.
Wow.
So I believed in therapy. I had never gone to it because I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. You know, I don't think I thought I had a problem. I thought I was working on everything and everything was going to work. Like I thought I was at the RTD and I was going to be able to do this. And I thought I was working on my health and this was going to happen. And so when it all just kind of collapsed in sort of this small time frame, it's sort of like when it rains, it pours, you know. And a lot of it, like I said, was the fact that I felt like I shouldn't be feeling that sad. That's really hard, too, when you feel that sad, but then you don't feel like you should feel that sad. And then you feel like you're guilty for feeling that sad because there's other people that are probably more sad. It's a snowball that just continues to hurt. And so, you know, that night, my mom really did. Oh, my gosh, it was snoring. I mean, I remember everything about it. And she was like, please, like, I am begging you. I need you to call, do something. And I am going to expect essentially a therapist appointment. Like, I want you to make this. And I said, I was just tired of it. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And the thing is I knew I didn't have it in me to end my life. Granted, I hoped every day that something would hit me, a car accident. I hoped something would take me out of this world that wasn't, because I didn't have it in me. Simply, and I know this sounds crazy, and again, I'm not somebody that is super keen on having children, but I do love my dogs. And I knew there's nobody that was going to love my dog as much as I did. And I couldn't imagine, you know, leaving him and him not knowing. And so I said, okay, fine. And so I called and I went to a therapist, a horrible therapist. She said, to fix some of my issues of feeling abandoned and worthless, I should watch rom-coms to remind myself that people do, you know, find love and find worth. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to come to you anymore. But she was able to prescribe, and she prescribed me to Prozac, and it's changed my life. It truly has. I mean, I started going to another therapist who also completely changed my life. The most amazing human being. I can't imagine my life without her. But I vividly remember, I don't know, it was maybe 2-3 months after I started taking Prozac, and I was walking my dog, and it was April, May morning, so it was kind of decent. And I remember very natural thought of thinking, this is a really nice day. But I hadn't thought of a naturally positive thought. Like, I mean, it caught me off guard. I was like, did I just think a positive thought? Like, this is... And then when you naturally think of it, like, all of a sudden, it sort of just started working. And it's just the same thing as with negative thoughts. The more positive thoughts that you have and the more that turns around, it really helps. And so doing that and then continuing to talk to my therapist, I mean, my therapist just, she made me write to my 18-year-old self. She made me write to my 50-year-old self. And the things that you do in the middle is you basically apologize for everything you did at 18. And you basically say, I hope you didn't do this at 80. And so you're sitting in the middle and you're looking at it and saying, okay, so this is what I can do. I can make this choice. And so, you know, we were working and, you know, kind of going through, you know, I was still having trouble with some, with finding something that had purpose. And, you know, I had made these cookies. This is kind of how it all comes back to it. I had made these cookies for, I mean, I came home in 2013. I probably started making them in maybe 2014 or 15. So many of us loved Little Debbie oatmeal cream pies growing up. I mean, it's part of our childhood, right?
It's a preschool memory.
And so my uncle and I, we did. My uncle was differently abled. He had had a brain tumor when he was 2, and he wasn't supposed to actually really live past 3. He did live to 33, but he was always, you know, developmentally delayed and a number of different issues. And so he was much more like a brother to me. And so
I want you to hold this story.
Okay.
Got to come back.
Okay. I will hold it. I'll hold it.
Full disclosure. Stay with us. This show podcast to NPR, Spotify, all of the fine podcatchers, including and especially Apple Podcasts. All of the links are at fulldradio.com. Again, fulldradio.com. And we are on all the socials at handle Full D Radio. Shout out to our listeners on NPR, member station, Radio IQ, WVTF, NPR's news station across the great Commonwealth. Holler if you too would like us on your air. If you are just joining us, I am in Chaco, Richmond, Virginia, historic farmers market, where the storefront OMGOCPs has been for the better part of 2 years. This is the dream and brainchild of my guest, Aaron Kennedy. We're talking about, you know, this interesting pivot. We're talking all things mental health and suicidal ideation and oatmeal cream pies and finding happiness. And your uncle, you were telling us before I cut you off.
Yeah. So basically, that's kind of where this oatmeal cream pie, you know, love came from. He and I would fight over them. He would try and hide them from me and so on and so forth. And so when he passed, I was in 10th grade. And, you know, you're always going to have one random thing that reminds you of somebody. And for me, it was every time I would see a box of Little Debbie's at the store, I would just think of him. He would always remind me. You know, and there's that, and then life goes on, and, you know, I went to Africa, and I moved, and there's no Little Debbie's anywhere, and so you don't, that's not something you think about, and then all of a sudden, you know, you come back home to the States, and you see a box of Little Debbie's, and it just reminds you, and Shindig's had actually just recently opened up, and they have...
Famous dessert place.
Good, big pieces of cakes, and everything, but they also made a oatmeal cream pie, a giant oatmeal cream pie. And it was the first time I was like, oh, huh, I've never seen this not packaged.
Giant oatmeal cream pie.
I know, but I had never seen it not packaged. And maybe they had been doing that here, but of course I hadn't been on, you know, this side of the pond, really, some people say. And so when I was like, oh my gosh, it's a homemade oatmeal cream pie. Like, you can make them.
How did you start the exploratory committee? So if a person's going to do a restaurant, they might do pop-ups, they might take over another person's kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you brainstorm with your mom and say, look, let's try to bake a couple of these?
No. I wanted to do a potluck, or I was going to a potluck and I wanted to impress. And I was like, you know, I have no baking experience. I have no cooking experience. I mean, I didn't. And well, I meal prepped. So, I mean, some cooking experience. And so basically, I kind of went looking for a recipe that essentially seemed easy because I didn't know what I was doing and had everything in there that I would recognize essentially or maybe have on hand. And there was a lot of recipes that didn't. They had all these other requirements that I didn't have. And then I found, a couple things that I could put together that worked. And again, at the time, I knew nothing about the science of baking and so on and so forth. So I baked it essentially like I would cook. I didn't do, you know, really measure things out and so on and so forth. And what it became was a very thin kind of almost like a no bake. Like it had oatmeal and it looked essentially kind of like a cookie, but it wasn't really an oatmeal cookie. But it was good. And so then I said, okay, well, I'm going to make it again. Let me see if I can make it exactly 100%. And then I didn't like it. I said, okay, well, this is too hard. It doesn't have the flavor, so on and so forth. And so then over the next few years, I would make them, say, for, I practiced a couple of times, you know, just over the summer and stuff within that first year, and sort of started learning. Okay, well, you know, this type of butter and this salted butter versus unsalted butter is very different. You know, brown sugar, light brown sugar with molasses, two very different things. And so you start learning all of these different things and what works. And eventually over time, I made them enough for Christmas gifts and potlucks and, you know, whatever it was, that I felt confident sort of with this cookie.
What were people telling you?
Well, a lot of people wanted the recipe. And as soon as enough people asked me for the recipe, because I didn't really know what to give them, because I don't feel like I had knew what the recipe was kind of myself, to be honest, for a while. And so as soon as I really got to a place where I was like, this is a good cookie and everybody wanted it, I was like, too many people want this. And so then I was like, I don't know.
But shouldn't a light bulb have gone off if too many people want it?
Well, then they were like, you should sell. This is at a time still when, of course, this is my depression. I can't sell one cookie. I can't do stuff like that. Again, finances has never been like, I don't have like all this capital and assets to do,
so,
you know.
What was the tipping point where it went from a hobby and, you know, you talk about walking your dog and the joy on that spring day.
Yeah.
And finding a calling, almost accidentally stumbling upon this.
Yeah. Well, so in between, so truly in between the, you know, walking my dog on that spring day and starting this was when I had that, you know, dream job space in 2020. And so it was a time where I had found positivity, and this job really affected my mental health. And so I had actually kind of come back down a lot. It was very much making me question my worth, because it was something I had worked towards for a long time. So I was like, well, you know, am I worthless? And I knew the answer at that time was no, but it was also still
nagging
that I was asking it to myself. And so, you know, I just kind of was like, I was looking at and nothing. I just kind of said, you know what, maybe what if I just try? And so.
So how did you have some savings?
No. I had $300. I had $300 to my name.
You had $300 to your name. You're living in your mom's house.
So I was living. So my mom had married, and I was living in the house that I had grown up in, and which was just kind of a lifesaver at the time of me moving in. It was right before 2020. It was supposed to be temporary, and then 2020 happened. But again, when it was in 2020, that was around the time where I was like, hey, you know, I've got this recipe. I kind of like it.
And half of this talk is sharing kind of sourdough starter.
Right, 100%.
It's like age for baking. I remember
people
were hoarding this King Arthur flour that my wife was sending me to the store.
Yes.
It was the peak moment. I joke that, you know, a cocaine dealer could make more selling flour.
at that point,
but it was certainly a peak for baking. Baking.
Yeah,
tell me about that. So you were homebound.
So I was homebound, and I was like, hey, you know, let me. I was Christmas. I was going to give them out as gifts, because again, finances were never my big thing. So I never really. So that's why I kind of used Christmas gifts, and I was like, oh, I bet you I could dip this in chocolate. I bet you I could add peanut butter to this cream cheese icing. You know, like, let me just see what I can do. And so I played around with a few different things. Like, I added espresso chips to it, and I didn't like that.
And having no baking experience, just saying,
Yeah, really. I mean, essentially, I mean, I had been baking now. I had kind of created this cookie over those few years that I had now this cookie. I trusted it. I trusted myself. I was like, I bet I could add this flip, you know, whatever.
So
just
was
something
your test
small
market when you would do
who was
funky.
My friends, it was like my friends for Christmas. I gave them out to, you know, a bunch of my friends for Christmas, people that I worked with, so
and
on and
they're
so
literally
forth.
Telling you no BS that you should try to commercialize this.
Yeah, I mean, I had been hearing that for a while too, but then when I had the flavors, they were like, ooh, I like this, and ooh, you could do this, and so on. And so again, even when I did the whole flavor thing, I still had never had no intention. That was in December 2020. I had no intention of making this a business. Even when I started in 2021, the new year, I had no intention. And it was in that November of 2021 where I was like, I needed to reinvent myself again. You know, I felt like I had finally gotten the dream job that I wanted. It was a whole hot mess. And what am I supposed to do now? And
did,
so
did you have any sort of exploratory committee or thing where, mm-hmm. you know, friends are nudging you, but I need to go out and reach out to people who I trust and ask?
Not at all.
So you just threw yourself headlong into this with the home oven?
Yeah. No, I just dive off and jump. I'm a jumper. And so I basically asked my Facebook friends. I said, hey, if I sold them, would you buy them? And I had about 13 people who wanted a dozen, and then I had a friend who was on the PTA of an elementary school, and she was like, hey, could we get 96 individually wrapped ones for our 9-week teacher appreciation? Like,
what were you selling each cookie at?
I mean, at the time, it was so cheap. Like, at the time, I didn't know. I think it was like maybe $2.
So was it an economic thing? You weren't covering your costs?
It was just like, hey, I wonder if I can do this. Like, I need to figure out something to do with my life. A, B, C, and D lately hasn't worked. You know, let me, and but again, I'm a very unconventional person. Like, there are people who have said to me, you know, I would never, I could have all the savings in the world and a 5-year business plan and all of these different things and investors and so on, and I still would never open a store. Mm. I didn't have any of that. I didn't have, I don't have any business background. I don't have any of that. And so I literally had $300 to my name. I was, because of everything in 2020 with unemployment and just all of the things, it was so backed up. And so I had the ingredients, so I didn't have to go buy anything. And I said, okay, so if I did this, and then when she asked me for the 96, I was like, so that's pretty easy. 96 new, like, that's just 96 new people. Like, all of a sudden, 96 new people who don't have my cookies now have my cookies. Like, well, that's pretty cool. That's pretty easy. And
tell me what was going on in your head as you would sleep at night and get excited about this. Because I knew, like, when I decided, okay, public radio.
I don't know.
Excitement taking over maybe the perseveration and the fear.
Yeah, I think when that, for when, you know, she called, and that was even before, when I had just simply asked the question, and she was like, can I get 96? And I was like, I didn't realize it would be, I don't want to say that easy, because business isn't easy, but it felt like, oh, well, that was easy. And so I kind of, well, I was really lucky that somebody that had had my cookies and I had worked out with for a long time owns Libby Market as well out in
the this morning. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So she let me put them in her store to sell. And I didn't know anything. I literally knew nothing what I was going to. I didn't know about needing to have ingredients on stuff. I didn't know any.
How do you even know how much to wholesale them for?
You're
going to deplete down your flour stock, your steel cut oats and everything.
None of that stuff is anywhere near my mind.
Meanwhile, with $300 in the bank.
Yes. I had like $300. So then, you know, we go through the Christmas time and I put some in Libby Market and they were like, by the way, you know, and they had sold really well. And then they were like, I think you need to have like ingredients and stuff on here. And I was like, well, let me look up these rules. And so I looked and I was like, oh, there's a lot that I need to get done. If I'm going to do this, I need to get my kitchen.
How does it even work? So, yeah, commercial kitchens.
Yeah, you got to get your home started. You have to get, you have to get a business license. You have to, you know, create a name. And at the time, you can be an easy, you know, just sole proprietor.
Somebody compared it to, you can't just be a little pregnant. Either you are or you aren't. If at some point you decide to be commercial, you have to submit to
100%. Yeah. Once I started, there was just no stopping. You know, once I started and you have a 17-page application and you have to give like every single thing of how you're going to wash stuff to where you're going to put it and dry it and so on and so forth and all of the things. And I sent everything in. He came and he inspected my kitchen on Valentine's Day of 2020.
In your house?
In my house. Yeah, I was just used. I mean, I didn't have anything. Like, I eventually had to end up getting like a deep freezer and stuff. But I mean, it was like my freezer. I had a little 5-quart KitchenAid.
With all this, is it? There's working capital. There's startup capital. There's only so much you could do out of elbow grease and existing inventory. So as you go out of the holiday season into 2021, and you know, when I first came here and saw you, you immediately invoked imposter syndrome, which is something we've all felt. Creating. Or making that leap of faith professionally, or reinventing, or the innovator's dilemma. And we have this pandemic still raging.
Sure. You know, it's sometimes like to, I like to think that I have some common sense. And so, you know, yes and no, I take that back. I also go into things like I just kind of run at the wall. And so I knew Nightingale Ice Cream here.
We've had them on the show.
Oh, cool. And so, you know, I remember when they hit the market, they saturated it. I mean, you would find them all over the place. And I said, that's what I'm going to do. Like, just thinking, okay, cool. I can do it. Like, just going for it. And so I made a bunch and I took them to about 15 different stores around Richmond and said, hey, you know, do you want to sell these? No idea that everyone would say yes. And then they were like, yes, can you get me this tomorrow morning?
Oh,
and at the time, because it was new to me. Like, I wanted to impress. I wanted to make sure everything was happening. I mean, I broke my back trying to get stuff together and going and get it there. And you know, I all of a sudden felt like I was drowning because I jumped a little bit, maybe in too deep into the end. And so I started to feel a little bit like I was drowning. And fortunately, over, you know, a couple of months, a few of them kind of fell out for a number of different reasons, whether it was on my choice or their choice or just stopped kind of selling or whatever. And so it got to a point where I was in three or four different spots around the city and they were all doing really well. And I said, okay, that's great. This is to say about April after that February. And
2021.
Oh, well, actually, technically 2022 at this point.
Oh, boy.
And so I was like, okay, well, I'm going to go into vendor events, you know, like, let me get out there. And
you do street fairs, farmers markets?
So the first one that I ever did, I did a 420 event, which is like, you know, Girl Scouts going and selling out of a dispensary. It was a brilliant market. I mean, I went and I did so well at that market. It was my first vendor market that it definitely, I was like, oh, this
Stoners
is what it's
on a 420.
Yeah, I mean, it was a, yeah, it was a big, it was a Virginia coalition of America. I can't even think of who, but they had a big festival. And I, you know, I didn't, they weren't edibles or anything, but it was great. I mean, everybody wanted, they were hungry. So
did
my cookies
look,
did so
you
well.
Did you get a lot of these, chains such as, Red Eye or,
no.
The cookie ones that appeal to kind of 2 a.m., 3 a.m. VCU people? Cause it's a unique niche. I mean, stepping back from it, it's poignant because of your late uncle,
mm-hmm.
someone who was, close to you and the impression and Little Debbie's and creating something that has a family backstory to you. And it reminds me also of Ingrid Schatz of Axel's daughter bakery and her Swedish baked goods going back to something that she did. She used to be the baker at Elwood's.
Okay.
And she started this up during the pandemic as well. And I'll introduce you. But I'm fascinated in kind of so the backbreaking stuff relented in 2022 and yet you opened up a storefront, which we're sitting in right here.
Yeah.
In Chaco Bottom in the heart of the old farmers market, which was completely redone.
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing now. It's...
So where, at what point were you even, I mean, do like internal, there must be a number in your head where you're like cash flow positive or I'm covering my expenses or I can buy this freezer now, I can buy this stuff. Did you have credit? How do you even go about this?
No, yeah, no, none of it.
You were just doing it all out of
I
orders?
I was just doing it all out. So I was doing it all out of orders. Now, I'll take this back. So right around February when the business was getting actually started and inspected, because of so much that had happened with unemployment between 2020 and now 2022, I got a pretty much sum of not quite $4,000 of back pay in terms for unemployment. So that helped significantly because then I could pay that $500, you know, business license fee and stuff like that. It went away very quickly going into the business stuff, but I was lucky. So I had $300 when I really decided to start the business, but I was very lucky that in this process of the 2 months after that, fortunately, you know, I never thought it would get finalized.
What was the cash coming in the door covering?
It was covering continuing to do it. I mean, I was, you know, I realized, you know, I got my numbers kind of pretty early and I said, at the time I wasn't taking into account my labor or my time. Like I didn't know any of that stuff. To me, really what I was just doing was making cookies, baking, like I really.
Occupying your mind.
Right. And I really enjoyed it. And I loved how much people loved them. So it made me happy to make them and have people want them. So it was never, I never was thinking, okay, I'm going to charge this much or I make this much and I'm going to have this profit and this capital and all these things. Like, that's not how my mind works. I am not business.
Did that ever kick in?
No, it still hasn't. Like, even honestly, even with the storefront, so we got into the storefront this past October. Last year, I didn't start the new year thinking anything about a storefront. Like, didn't cross my mind. And in April, May, all of a sudden, my orders just went crazy. I mean, they just got insane. And I was completely out of my kit. Like, I couldn't. I had gotten a deep freezer. I had added some space. And I had no more space. I just couldn't. I didn't have the space or the time or anything to bake. And I said, okay, I could do a food hall. I could do a food truck. I could do all of these different things. But I knew because of what I had it being unique to the market, like, even though, you know, the baking industry is pretty saturated, I knew this cookie, one, the oatmeal cream pie, but what I had done by taking it and creating a bunch of new flavors was different and nobody had done it before. And so everybody kept saying, like, are you sure you're going to be able to do this with cookies? Are you sure? And I've never trusted anything almost more. Like, everybody was like, why are you so calm? How are you so chill about this? And I was like, I just, I'd really trust what's
going
to happen.
Going on the hook for a rent, a significant.
I know.
How many
now,
square
granted,
feet?
Well, it's only 902 square feet, which is actually quite small, but it is in a very, very high demand location. So, you know.
Right in the shadow of Main Street Station.
Yeah.
Here in Richmond, Virginia,
yeah.
For people listening on the outside. And so you invoked imposter syndrome beforehand.
Yeah.
How did that not keep you up at night? So suddenly going from having $300 in the bank to having to sign up for a lease like this and have a guarantor and all this equipment, property plant equipment.
Yeah.
It's amazing, that recovery. And to go from the very bottom of kind of self-denial,
mm-hmm.
even self-loathing and self-doubt to being able to say, you know what, I'll wing it. I have confidence enough. I'm looking at it. Cookies right now, it says individual, $450. Dozen, $48. Gluten-free, $51. I mean, you went from, and then you said you're winging it yourself.
Still.
Not having known baking and still not having known business, but you look like where you want to be.
I've never been happier. And I would have never imagined, you know, 5 years ago that I would not only be happy in the space in my life, but I'm happy within myself, within my soul, within my mind. I didn't even know that it was possible because almost my whole life, I mean, with all the trauma, you know, that had built up to get to that point of just this dark depression, I mean, I pretty much, you kind of have a whole life of it. And so through this healing and everything, it's sometimes it's almost weird not to feel like I feel like I should be collapsing. And I'm not, or I feel like everybody was like, how are you so calm? And I should have been stressing out, but I wasn't. Always, I keep saying that this is a very happy accident. You know, the cookie sort of created itself, I guess. And it is a good cookie. Like, it is a delicious cookie. So, but besides being a delicious cookie, having it now in a way where it's, you know, like ice cream or like donuts where, I mean, we have 13 flavors in the case each month. And it sort of, having the store has now given me, I think I'm so happy because everything that I had wanted, all of the purpose and everything that I had been seeking for so long, I don't have to seek it within a different company or in a different space. I'm creating it. I can create it now. And that's the space that I think I'm currently thriving in. And so, yeah, I mean, this really just happened. I mean, I'm grateful my mom helped me. You obviously have to put down, you know, pay that first month rent plus, you know, a deposit. My mom helped me with that. But truly everything else, I mean, I either pulled out credit cards. I didn't get any loans. I don't really have any. I mean, I still drive a 2007 Honda CRV. It's not like that's not worth anything to anybody anymore. And, you know, the house, I don't own it. So like, I really don't have a lot of capital and assets. Like, this really came from selling. I mean, really selling, like, you know, doing big online stuff. I mean, I have a lot of corporate people. I do weddings.
Yeah, tell me about that. So the mix of wholesale and retail.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking something like this. Like, you invoked Nightingale Ice Cream Sandwich. We had a live show with them in mid-May of kind of how it was an immersion blender, I think, initially in Xavier's kitchen. And then next thing you know, that night, they're going to sign the deal at Fenway Park in Boston to be the official ice cream sandwich.
Yeah.
And now they're, you know, PFG is distributing them and everything. Have there been overtures from bigger commercial players that kind of want to ramp you up? Or have you decided to do more of a small batch thing? I don't know, maybe coffee shops and others who want to come to you and say, you are RVA. And just the same way you might seek out Lamplighter Coffee or Ironclad in Richmond, we want people at the airport knowing OMG OCPs.
Well, this is so in May, April, May, in that time where everything was happening, I got a very interesting email that's in the subject was QVC/HSN/ or CBS 6 in the morning or something like that. And I was just opened it up and it was very basic. And I was like, I can't decide if this is a scam or not. I'm going to call the person and she really happened to work for QVC, and there was a cookie. I think it's called. I don't want to mess it up, so I don't know really what it's called. But I guess it's like O H M I G. It's O M G in a way where it's spelled out. She just typed in O M G cookies into Google, and my cookies came up on her browser, and she looked at them, and she was like, "These look delicious," and so she called me. And that's when we started talking. And was like, wow, QVC, this is kind of crazy. So we talked about what would be necessary. And this is when I was still in my home kitchen. And she was like, well, to do a 7-minute segment, and you would need about 1,250 dozen. It's like, oh.
Wait, 1,250 dozen?
Yeah. And I was like, okay, yeah, I can't do that from my kitchen. And so that was the moment, besides all of the other orders that I was getting in, where I was like, if something like QVC like could find me and say, this is what I think our people would want, like our customers, I can do something. Like, this is awesome. So I said, well, I'm going to have to get a bigger space. Like, there's no way. And so.
And there's a whole new leap of faith in that, where you know what your run rate is. You know your social. You're really good at social media. I found you on Instagram. You share a lot of candor on Instagram, milestones, developments.
Yeah.
You know, employees. I met Emily on it. And so you could leverage that to a certain extent. But if some Goliath comes in here, like if the Oscars, let's say.
Sure.
Let's say someone, Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, have to go through town. Let's say.
I need to have 15,000 cookie pie, you know, for an Oscar party or something. That is a moment of kind of leap of faith. Do I do that? Do I scale up? Do I ramp up? That requires money. Mm-hmm. You seem to have an abundance of confidence now.
Yeah. So when they called and did that, I was like, okay, well, let me look, you know, like just what is looking going to hurt kind of thing. And we looked at a few places, and then this spot, this is one of the great reasons I took this spot and love this spot is it came with a giant cobalt mixer in the freezer. Like,
this was
a
beignet startup.
It was, but even before that, the mixer I think came from the pizza place when they were making the doughs and stuff. And so the fact that all of that was included, which is huge expenses, was a big selling point for me and a big deal for me. And I was like, I mean, this really what I needed was cold space and mixing space and storage space. And this is exactly what it had. I mean, and it came included. So I was like, well, I mean, that's really hard to pass up. But also one of those things where it's just with this whole process of the cookies, everything, the reason I know it is the right thing is because everything has worked out in the right moment. For example, even if I started it at $300, that $4,000 check that I've been fighting to try and get for about 2 years came at the moment I needed it to be able to take it to the next level. And then the next thing came at the moment that I needed it.
I wonder if it's your uncle.
I deeply believe it is. I really do. And I do think he would love them. Two, he would be so proud, which makes me proud. But I really do believe that there's no way, the way the timing and the things that just don't think they should work out or have worked out. I do. It has to be something. It has to be him. It has to be someone. And there has to be some help, because I don't know if I could necessarily do it on my own. And maybe that's what some of the confidence is, because I know I'm not doing it on my own. I am, but I'm not, you know? And so, yeah, it really has just kind of doing a food truck, doing all of those things just didn't make sense. I knew I wanted to sell it as, you know, being able to go in and get a dozen donuts and have all these flavors and stuff. And so, you know, it's kind of a leap to go from a home kitchen to a storefront space. You know, there's a lot of middle. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, local food halls that I could have easily done and so on. And it really, like, to make that leap is a leap. Like, it's huge. It's not like I had all this money in the bank saved, and I couldn't get loans because I was under 2 years old. So you have to have 2 years of tax returns to get loans. So I couldn't get loans. I was on the back end of coming out of a lot of debt. And so I was scared to even do anything with credit cards. I had done everything I could not to open them for a couple of years so I could be kind of getting out of this debt
spiral
of life. And yeah, and another thing that leads to that darkness. And so, you know, it worked. Like, even though the credit cards, I mean, some of them, because I might have only gotten $1,000 on it, or, you know, $3,500, but it might have been just the amount that I needed to get the product that I needed. And so it's still not about money for me. Like, I still don't pay myself. It's much more important for me to have an employee like Emily and Ashley and be able to offer those, you know, opportunities to those who are differently abled, similar to my uncle and so on, than to pay myself. And so, and you know, this is a prime location. You know, rent is not terribly cheap for somebody who's selling, you know, a $4.50 individual cookie. And again, I don't have all that capital and everything saved up. So we're still kind of going day by day here, but I still know that it's going to grow. I mean, in this location, the amount of people, because we're at the train station and Airbnbs that we get from all over the country who are just come in and become obsessed, makes me know, like, if and when I franchise, it'll do well. Like, it's unique. It's different. People really gravitate towards it. And so even, you know, my next step, I would think somebody's like, oh, I'm going to open a second location. My thought process is, okay, well, how can I create, maybe I do a production kitchen. And if I do a production kitchen, I can do, you know, I can do wholesale and I can ship them out around the country, see what's doing really well, and then go right into, you know, trying to franchise. There's a lot that comes from that. And, you know I would have to ask for some sort of capital or investments, and all of that stuff is really weird to me. To think about even having money in the bank is a weird thing. I've never really just had money in the bank. And so, because again, it's always been about purpose for me rather than finances. And so I know I need to have money in the bank to do these things. But again, I didn't have money in the bank to do this. And so things have always kind of worked out. And so I just trust that it will. When I do a production kitchen, I would love to be able to, you know, work with a nonprofit that has differently abled people. And we could do something like that where, you know, routine works really well. And we could do a production kitchen with a huge employee base of those who are differently abled. So this is my opportunity. Like I said, where I'm finding purpose now. I can, all the things that I wanted to try and do and create and change in all of these jobs and these things that I was trying to find to make me happy, I can do here.
To that end,
yeah.
In closing, I want you to amplify the letter back to yourself in 2018, 2019, to all those people out there who are struggling right now. I know you get asked this a lot, and you offer it without any prodding.
Yeah, you know, that space is the hardest space to be in, that darkness of feeling like it's just always going to be dark, where you just don't know where light is coming from. But, mental health is, it's just still so stigmatized, and it needs to not be. It really needs to not be. Again, if you're going to break a bone in your arm, you're not going to just let it heal on its own, you know? And so medicine and therapy and really taking the actions to work on stuff, writing those letters to myself, going through the processes, it was really hard, but it was really necessary. And it's very, very healing. And so if you can do it, which I really think, you know, if people, it's hard to say, just try and do it. You hate it when people say, oh, just be positive. Just do this. Oh, just, you know, just try. It's not, it isn't, I'm not saying it's that easy. But if you do and you follow the steps and you are just like, you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, there is a real light at the end of the tunnel. And if you really go through the healing process and you sort of figure out and do the things that I think make you happy, whether it's what society thinks or whatever, you know, whatever it is, if you can find the stuff that feeds your soul, then you're going to just naturally just be happy. And sometimes you have to create that for yourself. And if you continue to look for it everywhere else, it's not always going to be found unless you really look it within yourself.
Erin Kennedy, we can call you now a oatmeal cream pie mogul, I guess.
Yeah, maybe.
As long as the imposter syndrome is like, she is the founder and proprietor of OMG OCPs in the heart of Chaco, Richmond, Virginia. Will you give us your social media handles?
Yep, it's everything, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, all of them are at OMG OCPs.
And do you ship across the United States?
So we do. Well, we don't ship across the U.S. just yet. We do ship East Coast and kind of Ohio, Midwest, and to the East. But yeah, I'd love to. I have shipped. It's just a little bit complicated. So if we need to, we can make it work.
Thank you for coming on. Full disclosure, special thanks to Claire Morgan and Case Graham at Notterly. Note, and in this case especially, that oftentimes when we have to cut for broadcast length at about 52 minutes, the show can and will run long. The great news is you can catch the entirety of every conversation on podcast. So let me give you the particulars again. The link is fulldradio.com. Again, fulldradio.com. All the podcatchers are there, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts. We're also on the great NPR app. You could catch us on NPR member station, WVTF Radio IQ, across the great Commonwealth of Virginia. Holler if you too would like us on your air. My DMs are always open at handle Full D Radio. And catch me every week on NPR's Here and Now. I'm Robin Farzad. Thank you for listening, and back with you next week.